CliffCentral.com.
Okay, CliffCentral.com. Can you see me better now, Mbulelo? I tried to sort out my camera during the break. Is it still shit?
I don't think it's your camera. I think you probably need to the internet connection that you got going. It's
oh my god, how embarrassing!
Letting you and the Republic of South Africa and indeed the globe down.
Oh,
yeah, you know, sort of a COVID of sorts.
I'm such a letdown. I'm so embarrassed. Oh, how humiliating!
No. You must separate. You see, you got in your feelings there. Separate that the internet. Your internet is letting down. That's not a reflection upon Gareth Cliff the human. So
is this
that's
any
tough
better?
To do, but I mean...
Is that it? No. No, that's even worse. Oh, my God.
Yeah, now you've gotten... You've gone from COVID to polio somehow.
Jesus, sorry about that.
No, this is the height of regression, if you will. I mean, I don't mean to be too hard on on you.
But. I'll tell you what, we'll figure this out. I'm sorry. If you've come on the YouTube channel to see me, you were always going to be disappointed, but not technologically, more in the subject matter. Sorry about this. Right. So many things to get to. It's probably telecom, Gareth, says Jean. Let's just do this quickly. Let me do a network test speed. Should we do that? We can see whether it's my network. I mean, this is so much fun. Let everybody in on exactly what my network speed is this morning. Okay, it's... Oh, please, 100. I got 186 Mbps. That's not bad. Nothing wrong with that.
No, that's incredible. Hey, do you have like a 200 meg line at home, by the way?
Sure, huh? We're not messing around, dude. I'm going to tell all those people who complain about how we don't, and that's download speed. Upload speed, 67, somewhere around there, 67, 70. We're good.
So you know what you probably have to do is, if you do want to fix it, is you probably just need to reset your Wi-Fi, just the connection in your house, because sometimes that kind of resets things that might get us back. Otherwise, we can just keep going. And,
I think we must just keep going. I don't want to interrupt the show. Here's Leanne Mole, everybody. Hey.
We'll be back.
All right. So apparently the Eastern Cape is poos cold, according to Robin. I didn't know that. Okay. Gareth, you look like you're broadcasting from a haunted mansion. Well, that is kind of what my house is like. Okay. All right. Well, thanks for all the technical advice, everybody. There's some really useful bits of info here. I promise you we'll figure this out. There have been, despite the fact that we've had technical challenges, we have never missed one whole show on this. In fact, this whole year, I think I've taken off one day. I think I took one day off. So really, I don't think that's so bad. I don't feel like that's a terrible record.
That's good going.
As things go. yes.
I was just, while we were on the break.
Did you go for a poo?
No. Oh. I went for a fag.
Oh, well done. Are you still allowed to call them that?
But he denied me.
oh, you homophobe, you. Oh,
Certainly not.
The LGBTQIA plus community are going to come after you now. Watch.
Please. I'm front and center at any gay pride march. It's interesting to note that South Africa now has 20% of the population vaccinated.
Okay, good.
So it made me think, well, what are other countries doing?
Yeah, tell
and
us.
And right at the top of the list, go Portugal, 84% of the country is vaccinated. That's amazing. It's Portugal, Malta, Qatar, Singapore, Spain, Iceland, Uruguay, Chile, Denmark, etc. We're way back in the on the list.
Okay. I mean, listen, if you want to get vaccinated and you haven't yet, you've got no excuse because it's rolling out everywhere at the moment. And I think that this is actually a great example, the vaccination drive, of how private business has come along and helped government to do things a whole lot better. So again, I think this is really, it's a thing we should be quite proud of. It's a thing that to me looks like a good example of how we can still get things done in this country if we need to. Really? Don't you think?
Adrian Gore. I know I keep saying this man's name. This guy's serious.
Except I did see he's mandated vaccinations for everyone who works for Discovery. So in other words, you don't have a choice.
Oh, fair enough. Who Fair are you enough. To tell him what to do in his own company?
Well, then what happens to my body, my choice? Are we going to just mandate people?
No, go work somewhere else.
Let me ask
go
you.
Go work
this.
At Momentum.
So you know I'm not an anti-vaxxer. You know I think that the vaccine is a miracle, right? I've said that 100 times on this show. And if it can get us all out of COVID ASAP, then that's what we should do. But you can't do this. You can't say, well, because your health is at risk, we're going to force you to take this thing. Otherwise, you're going to stop fat people from eating.
And I mean, we don't have to conflate issues.
You're going to stop people.
You're doing something called conflation there. Listen, if you don't want to do it, go and work at Momentum. Because, Gareth, you can't be a hypocrite as well. You're all for capitalism. Adrian Gore can do as he pleases.
Absolutely he can. I'm not saying Adrian Gore is not within his rights to do this. And obviously anyone who works for him and doesn't want to do this can resign. Sure, in protest. Go somewhere else. Yeah. Absolutely.
By all means.
And if you're any good, you'll get a job somewhere else. If you're no good, you might not get a job somewhere else. That's absolutely fair. Here's my problem, is that this could be the kind of thing that governments, who we don't have the option of not participating with, where they hold a gun to your head and do these things, they could get into this this position of authoritarianism. Imagine if they say to you, for example, well, if you get a heart attack because you're obese, we're not going to treat you in hospitals because you did that to yourself. What if they say, we're no longer going to treat STDs because you did that to yourself? This is a very slippery slope and worries me.
In the private sector, or you mean if governments get a hold of this?
I mean where ordinary citizens no longer have the option. And then let's talk about my body, my choice. Imagine the government starts saying, well, it's not your choice anymore. We're either going to force you to have the child, or we're going to force you to abort the child. Can you imagine what an egregious overreach that is by authority? It's the same principle. It's the same principle.
Although I'm not big on my body, my choice anyway. So you're not eliciting anything in me where I've got problems. Is I believe we need rules. So my body, my choice can go and fly a kite somewhere else with me. But I hear what you're saying, but I don't believe in too much liberal. Like people, when left to themselves, we know where they go. So we need rules. We need structure. We need society. And we've worked so hard since the ancient Greeks to work towards ultimately a moral position that works not for everybody, but for the large majority. And we're still working for that.
Anyway,
we'll never have perfect.
I'm sorry I brought this up. You see, Leanne was just telling us some interesting facts about which country is the most vaccinated. Poor Leanne. She brought some interesting statistics to us, and now look at us. We're arguing about this shit. All I have to say is, if you force people, if you do not give people the option, first of all, they're suspicious of why you're not giving them the option, and they start getting into all kinds of conspiratorial nonsense, which we frankly do not need. Secondly, the moment you go down the slope of, we're going to tell you what to do because we know better when it comes to your health, whether it's Adrian Gore, and he does know more about my health than I do. I'm willing to admit that. And there are lots of smart doctors who know even more than him. And they will tell you, you know what? You should eat your beetroot. You should eat your broccoli. You should eat your beans. You shouldn't have so much meat. You shouldn't drink so much. You shouldn't do X, Y, and Z. That's absolutely right. But the moment you are mandated to do this and you can no longer go to the shops and buy yourself that healthy food because people say, well, you're not doing this or you're not doing that. You're not doing this little dance before you enter our shop. You're walking into some very dangerous territory then. It worries me. It worries me a lot because these same people don't seem to have that standard when it comes to obesity. They don't seem to have that standard when it comes to sexually transmitted diseases. They don't seem to have that standard when it comes to a woman's right to choose over what she wants to do with an unborn child. Suddenly it all goes, whoa, that's not what I'm saying. It's just for COVID. This is very different. Is it really? It's not like COVID is killing gazillions of people. It's not like every second person who gets COVID dies from it. You understand? If you've got polio, that's fairly fucking significant. That really does change your life. Right? If you get adult measles, that's really dangerous.
But I do think it's important to exercise what we call existentialism here. Is, you know, if you conflate, if you say we've got to apply the same rules to COVID as we do for fat people or whatever is that's not a useful way to look at it. Is we can have a set of rules for how do we philosophically approach sort of sedentary behavior. That's its own thing. We'll come to that. But we're dealing with COVID now. Let's deal with one thing at a time, because this is what politicians do to us all the time. Conflation's so dangerous because we see Hollywood do it all the time, because, hey, if you aren't in a mixed race relationship, it means you hate gay people because you don't think anyone who's ever been oppressed mixed should race. Move forward. And that's dangerous.
Yeah.
So I think I'll meet you halfway.
Let me just show you what I mean.
Politicians get hold of it.
So I'll show you what I mean and why this is irritating to me. And I don't know if you saw all of this going on social media, but this is pretty hilarious. So Bongani Bingwa, who was very outspoken about his point of view, he says, truth, this is a tweet of his. This is back in at the end of August, so 31st of August, just the other day. He goes, truth, the unvaccinated pose a risk to society. The longer people remain unvaccinated, the more of them there are, the greater the chance for this virus to mutate, and the graver the danger to kill all of us. Is it time to draw a line in the sand? This is what he asks on his show.
God.
And then he gets a doctor on and watch what happens.
Well, here's a question. Do unvaccinated people drive new variants?
Totally not true. I actually responded to a question on Twitter over the weekend as well. It could only be true if vaccinated people cannot become infected. So as long as vaccinated people can become infected as well, the virus will replicate in their bodies as well. And replication means that the virus makes more virus. And
so there we go. So suddenly someone got schooled. Yeah. There's a media professional who suddenly thought he was a doctor as well. Great. And that look on Bongani's face is the look of someone who's just been taught something. At least he had Professor Fielding on the line to correct him. But you know what I mean? This is the kind of bullshit that people are spreading around when they don't know a goddamn thing. And it's I'm sorry it happened to Bongani. I don't happen to have a problem with Bongani. I think he's cool. But embarrassing as it is for him to be corrected like that on the air, that's what we need, is the truth has got to come out. And all this nonsense that people
are... Who says that?
It's like the people who say, well, if you get the vaccine, you'll definitely die. That's bullshit. It's bullshit. Stop spreading lies.
You know, this isn't Drake's new album. And Gareth, I've told you, I'm very uncomfortable now in life speaking. In fact, I don't waste my time speaking to anybody who doesn't have an undergrad in science anymore about science, because it just drives me crazy. Bongani, this isn't an opinion about Drake's new album. It's not about what you think about Angela Merkel's policies and how they'll affect North Africa. Like, that's not what's happening here, pal. There are men and women who have died so that we can get here with science. And I don't know Bongani, so I don't know if you know him, but that statement was mental.
He's a nice dude, but anyway, I have no problem with that. And at least there was an opportunity for him to be corrected. Yeah. All right, so let's move on. We've got Jess Robus on the line. Jess is a 14-year-old author. She sent me an email. She said, I'm 14 years old. I just published my first poetry book, which is called A Few Slivers of Light, which has a strong focus on mental health. I've done many interviews recently, including radio and TV, but I really hold your interview style in high regard and would love the opportunity to chat with you on Cliff Central. So I thought, well, first of all, that she thinks my interview style is good shows you she's got mental health issues. But here she is. Jess, I'm proud of you. 14 years old and publishing your first poetry book. That is impressive, and well done to you. That's just absolutely incredible. By 14, I didn't know whether I was a teapot or a hockey stick, so you've done amazing things here.
Really, thank you so much, and thank you so much for having me here today.
No, it's an absolute pleasure. So tell me, what kind of, is this poetry about boys you fall in love with at school, or is it slightly more meaningful?
Well, the poems in the book mostly chart my experience with mental health issues. So things like anxiety and depression, and actually lots of poems which, looking back retrospectively, I can see were times when my OCD was acting up. Of course, I didn't know that then.
Yeah.
And then a couple of the poems themselves are split into three categories. The book is, you've got the darkness, then the dawn, and then the day, and those are the three categories within the book. And it's sort of charting my journey from like being in a really dark place mentally to now, thankfully, a lot better than I was back then.
I'm very glad it starts with the darkness and goes to the dawn and ends in the day, because if it had gone the other way around, I don't know that we'd be talking to you right now. I mean, lots of people have the opposite journey. And no, they do. They become suicidal, and that's the last you hear of them, you know. What exactly are your mental health issues, if you don't mind me asking? Because, I mean, we're going to talk about your poetry. We need to know. So what do you got?
Well, I got almost the full house. No, just
really. Because there are a lot of people these days who use mental health as kind of a personality adjunct, you know. They use mental health as something that they suppose makes them interesting, especially a lot of young people who frankly have no personality. And then they come to you and they go, well, I suffer from this and I suffer from that and I suffer from that, and I go, oh God, you're a box of chocolates near a fireplace.
Yeah. Definitely. I think that is a very dangerous place to be, because my viewpoint is that mental health it shouldn't be something that defines you. It should rather be something that you learn to live with. It's something definitely that impacts you in your day-to-day life, but instead of being your only defining characteristic, something that is completely, like, something that just envelops you completely and totally, I think that it should rather just be a part of you. The part of you that you treat like any part, like what your favorite color is or what you don't like or, you know, things like that.
So what do you got? I mean, you said a bit of OCD, which I can totally relate to, you know, organization and complete routines and having to say things to yourself and counting stuff, and there are rituals involved in this. I mean, that's something I can understand. What else you got?
I suffer from anxiety and depression, and that was particularly prevalent in the time of writing this book. I really was not in a good place, and I hadn't gone to a psychologist yet, so I didn't quite know how to process these thoughts and feelings in a constructive manner.
But isn't that just called being 14? I don't mean to be patronizing. No, you know, you're clearly a very smart person, and I'm not going to talk down to you like many people might. Isn't being 14 an existential crisis for everybody when they're 14? I mean, I remember being 14, and I jokingly said to you at the start I didn't know whether I was a teapot or a hockey stick. But the fact is, like, I was a spotty teenager, didn't know where I fitted in. Everything made me anxious because I was worried about what people thought about me. And that only went away maybe in my 20s. And maybe because I also didn't go to a psychologist, Jess. No one ever diagnosed me with anything. I probably had, if I'd sat with a psychologist long enough, and I'm sure many people, if they sit with a psychologist long enough, you find out that you've got a little bit of anxiety. Maybe you also find out that you've got attention deficit disorder, which a lot of young people do, especially the cleverest ones. Maybe a little OCD too, and that could have been something that was engendered into you at a young age. Do you know what I mean? Like, these are things that this is being human. Is it necessarily a disorder, or is it just being human in your mind? What do you think when you look at your own life?
So I think that I agree with the fact that everybody goes through feelings of, like, being anxious sometimes or feeling emotionally low. I think that I agree with the viewpoint that the need for a psychologist or a diagnosis comes in when it impacts your life to a degree that really you, like, can't do anything else. It impacts your functionality and your quality of life to a large extent. I mean, I know personally that, sorry, I'm just collecting my words here.
There are a whole lot of comments. Collecting your words.
You're doing phenomenal.
I must tell you, there's so many people who are complimenting you on how articulate you are and how well you manage to put all these things. So by all means, take a moment to collect yourself. It's hugely impressive already.
Thank you. So as I was saying, I think that everybody goes through these things, you know, like you said, it's sort of a human experience and a teenage experience, especially with the still developing brain. You know, you've got a lot of things going on inside of your psyche. But I think that the thing with people with any sort of mental health issues is it's so much more than that. I mean, like, some people get anxious and you get, I don't know, you have to do a public speaking speech, because I know that public speaking is something which is quite literally, according to statistics, feared more than death.
Right.
But, yeah, no, and you get nervous when you're going to do that, and that's understandable. But I think that, like, if you're going about your day, if you're going about your daily life and constantly feeling as if everything is going to get you, like you feel this sense of unease, like you've just fallen down the stairs, something like that, you know? If you're constantly feeling these feelings, then I think that you can measure it according to a baseline of other people mm-hmm. who don't always feel that. It just arises in certain situations. And I think that's the point where treatment becomes necessary, you know? Because everybody feels it. It's just like you've turned up the dial.
Right. I want to get to your book in a second, but I can see Leanne nodding along with what you're saying, because I think she also experiences a lot of this, and she's much, 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 much older than you. Much older than you, but she can. But she can definitely.
So much older.
I wouldn't be able to tell.
Oh, you're very sweet.
Thank you.
All right, so Leanne, what did you think of that? That makes a lot of sense, right? The way she explained the baseline and.
Yeah. It's definitely got to do with how long these feelings go on for. A lot of people will experience depression and anxiety in their lives, and it is part of life. It's just the way that we're built. But when it goes on and on and on for months, you realize that, you know, either genetically or due to a hormonal imbalance or whatever it may be, that this is something that you're going to have to live with. Yeah, it's difficult for those who haven't experienced it to understand it.
Right.
And we certainly don't walk around saying things like, you know, I suffer from depression lightly. I think that anyone who was trying to seek attention from it would give up the act fairly quickly. It's a serious condition.
Yeah.
Well, Jess, tell us about the book now, because that was obviously one of the ways for you to deal with this. And there are different ways that people can deal with anxiety or any other mental health condition. And we know this because there are treatments that are medical, obviously chemical treatments that people can go through. There's psychotherapy. There's also having a, you know, balanced lifestyle and making sure that you do a bit of exercise, eat properly, all that stuff. We know that those things have a tremendous impact on mental health. But in your case, I would suspect also, because you are a person who clearly is smart and likes words, and you're able to articulate yourself well in writing. Writing the book have been, well, I'm just assuming this, I haven't read it yet, but I think writing probably for you is also cathartic, right?
Oh, yes, definitely. I think that in writing the book, I had the experience of being able to put thoughts that I really couldn't articulate inside of my head. I couldn't find the words for them into words. And it was honestly quite weird sometimes. Like, I'd be feeling something and I wouldn't quite know what that feeling was. And I'd sit down and put a pen to paper, and suddenly the words would be there and they would make sense. And still don't know how that happened.
Well, that's really a kind of magic. Because so many people struggle to explain what they're going through. This is the hardest part for those of us who don't understand mental illness. And I'll include myself in that category, because Leanne kind of gave me a side swipe now anyway. And that's what she meant. I've struggled to understand mental health issues, because for better or for worse, I don't think I have that many. And if I do, they're at a low level, and I'm perfectly able to go through my day without them stopping me. But I know that's not the case for everybody. And what, one in three people in this country is suffering from some sort of mental health issue. So the fact that you can write this down and explain how it feels might be as useful for the people who are struggling with this stuff as for the people who are not. You might be able to explain it finally to people like me. Breakthrough.
Thank you. I think... Oh,
go on.
Sorry.
No, no, go on.
I interrupted there.
Not at all.
Thanks. I think that recently I've come up with an analogy that I think sums it up quite nicely. I think that especially living with something like depression feels a lot like eating when you have COVID. You know, if you're having your favorite food, it's something that you've enjoyed beforehand. It's something that you know for a fact is good.
Mm-hmm.
And you're trying to convince yourself that this is going to be good, right? Like, you've had this lots of times before. It should be great, right?
Right.
And so you eat it, and there's nothing there. And so you feel upset because you're missing out on this good thing that you know for a fact is good, and you also, a part of you feels like upset at yourself, like, come on, do I really have to be missing out? Gee, thank you a lot, body. And so you just can't taste anything and are trying really hard to actually experience it, but it's just, it's nothing there, even though you know that there should be. And that's what it feels like to go through day-to-day life with good experiences and just not be able to get that goodness from them.
So you wrote this book, and poetry can be hugely self-indulgent, and I suppose mental health poetry can be even more self-indulgent. But I'm sure that there is a massive market of people who will want to hear this for the reasons that I've already explained. But also, what is it like for people your age? I mean, are you guys talking about this stuff? If you talk to your friends about it, is it something that comes up in conversation fairly regularly? Are there a lot of you who are struggling with the same things?
Yep. Unfortunately, there are a lot of people that I know within my peer group and then just at school who struggle with mental health issues. I mean, you've got a lot of things. You've got like the quintessential body issues and stuff like that, which come with the teenage years. Mm-hmm. You've got anxiety, sometimes furthered by school and lack of sleep and just the busyness of day-to-day life in the 21st century.
And shitty parents.
You've got a plethora of things.
There are some people who have shitty parents. I'm not saying that's your case at all. It seems like you've been raised as a well-rounded human being. But like, you don't get to choose your parents, right? And some people also have, mm-hmm. they have very little going on in their lives. They don't have good influences or hobbies or things that they're passionate about. Maybe that's also a big part of it.
Yeah. Definitely. I think that the more it's sort of like a vicious cycle. The more you feel isolated from yourself, the more you'll try and isolate yourself from everything else. Like, you won't want to do things because that would take up effort. You feel like you don't have much energy to expend to make that effort. Like, you don't want to do anything, but the best thing would probably be to go out and do some things. And so people don't have good influences and they just don't do these things.
And this is perhaps the hardest pill to swallow for lots of people who are in this position. Again, I'm not saying this is applicable to you, Jess, or to anyone else in particular, but there seems to be a huge amount of self-absorbed energy in the world at the moment. Like, if a lot of these people who are dealing so much with themselves and how they feel about themselves and what they think of their own feelings, and they're trying to figure out what's going on in their own heads, maybe if they just spent a bit of time thinking about other people and actually projecting outward instead of inward the whole time, maybe they'd be a bit happier. Just a thought.
I just want to extend on that. Gareth, I think when you have a gift, like we're looking at here, it no longer becomes self-absorption because you're able to reach so many other people who are going through the same thing, and your purpose becomes a lot bigger. I mean, just as a 44-year-old woman sitting here now, being somebody who's suffered with anxiety and depression since the age of 20, I'm looking at this. I'm still being inspired by a 14-year-old girl.
Absolutely.
Who has decided to reach out. And to me, that's not self-absorption at all.
I'm definitely not saying this is Jess's problem, by the way. I think the fact that she's written this book is an outward expression, which I think is particularly useful. And I compliment you on this. Hey, you didn't come here, Jess, because you thought you were going to get an easy ride. And I was going to say, oh, Jess, well done. You're such a great, wonderful 14-year-old, and patronize you for 15 minutes. I brought you on because I thought this is someone who's smart enough to be able to handle some tough questions, which you have. So answer this for me quickly. What is the way out of this for people like you were when you wrote the book? And you may still be. I mean, it's an ongoing thing, right? You don't just conquer this stuff. It's part of your life. As you said, you learn to live with it. So what's the answer? How do you wake up every day and help yourself to not go down that dark path into the dark and then have to go through the dawn and maybe get through the day? Or is that just something you accept now and that you deal with?
I think that's a hard question because it can be a very difficult thing to do. I think that if you're in that dark place, often it can be difficult just to go about your daily life, you know, just that to get out of bed in the morning. I think the first thing to do, the first step, would be to find somebody that you can talk to, whether that's like for a teenager like me, whether that's a parent or a friend or a psychologist or anybody like that, and try to start, you know, getting some tools, some like coping mechanisms or things like that that you can use just on a day-to-day basis to make life a little easier. And then also maybe to try and start working through some of these thoughts. And then that in itself is quite a process. But I feel like there is an element of time that plays into it. You know, sometimes I know that even now, sometimes I'll have a bad day and it will be a very bad day. And you just got to weather it out sometimes. Like you get tools to make it more bearable. And especially if you're in a dark place, those are very helpful. And sometimes you've got to learn how to make it more bearable. You don't focus on trying to make it go away. Rather, you focus on getting yourself through it, getting yourself to the other side. And so, yeah, my advice would just be to, and I've always said this to people with mental health issues, because I feel like the stigma around it needs me to, I think that people should realize that it's not their fault what they're going through, but it is something that they can get through, and that they don't have to do it alone or like hide it away. It's not a taboo topic, nor should it be. So I would just focus on talking to people, finding some ways to make day-to-day life easier.
It's incredible to me that you have those things you just said now are the kinds of realizations it took me. Leanne talks about a 44-year-old woman who's dealt with this stuff her whole life. It's taken me that amount of time to say the things that you've just explained. And I think that really is you're some kind of you're some kind of savant when it comes to this stuff, I have to say. But one more thing I need to know, and this is something Michael brought up in the comments. Well, you also take compliments well, which is really impressive. I mean, that's something I still haven't learned how to do. So, Jess, what do you think of social media that's done to young people and how that's impacted on people's mental health?
Ooh, I think that social media is quite a mixed bag. I think that so personally, I think that there are lots of downsides. That's the side that we often see, especially if you're a teenager. Like, you know, what parents and what teachers often tell you is all of the downsides which do exist, you know, like cyberbullying, which is a real and dangerous issue, and things like a perpetuation of false stereotypes around body image and around what the ideal life should be. I think those definitely do exist, and there are real dangers.
Oh, they sometimes but exist on this show. Side, I mean, we're guilty of them a lot of the time.
Yeah. I think, though, that sometimes the side that we don't see is the good things which come from social media. Like, you have even things like mental health, like my message. It's so much easier and more efficient to spread it by social media, sure. And you can really just impact so many different people that you would never really get to communicate with beforehand. And like that communication, again, the ability to form friendships, genuine friendships with people who aren't in your immediate vicinity, and like, again, just to impact lives that aren't within a 5-kilometer radius of you. And I think that's very helpful.
Listen, your book is available, and I think that this is important for parents or for friends or for people who need to hear this from someone who they can look directly in the eye, instead of having some adult write this about what it's like to be 14 and what it's like to have these mental health issues. Why don't you buy Jess's book? You can go and find it at Jess Robus, Jess, JessRobus.com, and you can order her book straight from her. I think this is a terrific, terrific initiative. I'm so impressed. You're currently in grade 10,
Thank
right?
You.
What do you want to do after this? What's your future? Where do you want to go?
So I want to study linguistics and creative writing, and then probably go on to be a screenwriter. I'd love to do that.
Lordy. That speaks to my heart. First year of varsity, linguistics was my bag.
Ooh.
Yeah. So I really draw quite a few similarities and between us, but not me at the age of 14. The age of 14, I was only interested in dating the hottest guy in school. I certainly wasn't at that level, but I feel like we're on a similar level now. It's only taken me 20 years to get there. So I'm just hugely impressed, and just speaking on behalf of what I'm seeing in the comments as well.
Yeah, there's so many people here who are just saying wonderfully complimentary things about you.
Yeah, well done.
Thank you, everyone.
I think it's amazing, and your future is certainly very, very, very bright.
I'm glad we got to meet, Jess, and I'm really proud of you for writing this book, and I hope that you will continue to do, even if you and I never meet the people that you help, you continue to do this kind of thing, because there's a huge gap in the world where people are, you know, they're sick of being spoken down to, they're tired of having other people try and explain away mm-hmm. their problems, and no one's actually listening to each other. And maybe your words and your descriptions of what you went through will help. Who knows? I mean, that's probably the best case scenario. And the worst case scenario is you're a 14-year-old author, which is bloody amazing. So give yourself a pat on the back. And I'm just really thrilled that we got to spend some time with you this morning. Thank you, Jess. All right, I'm hearing myself.
Thank you so much for having me. It was wonderful to be here.
Thank you so much.
Sorry, that, she sort of walked in.
Oh, was your mom listening?
Thank you.
All right, very good. I'm glad that she was listening. I'm very pleased. You know what? There are 14. Well, she was 14 when she wrote the book. She's now in grade 10. There are young women and men in this country who are just so goddamned impressive. I've said this before. We met a lot of them through the course of doing those debates with ABSA, the Interchange. Just these incredibly erudite, smart, sophisticated people. And really, Leanne, what you described about yourself when you were 14 and my description of me when I was 14, we were disasters by comparison. So watch Jess. If you ever forget about buying Bitcoin, invest in Jess. buy her book, because you can say you spotted her talent before everyone else. It's amazing.
I hope she knows she's going to be really busy her whole life. Whether it's writing, inspiring, studying.
Good.
She's certainly not going to be lying on her back watching TikTok, that's for sure.
Once in a while, the universe sends us a remarkable specimen like Jess, says Zach, to give hope for humanity and to those who lost hope in humanity like me. So, wow, that's high praise indeed. I always wonder, though, and I that's why I asked her the tough questions, because you know me, I'm not likely to just do what all the other sycophants in the world do and go, oh, wow, it's so wonderful that you wrote a book. Because it might be, you know, that some people write books that are terrible. And just because you've got a book published doesn't mean you're any good. There are lots of motivational speakers who've published books and they're absolute rubbish. But in this case, I think that just having actually met this remarkable young lady, it's clear to me that she is someone who's got a gift, and you should spread that gift. However, I got to say again, when it comes to mental health, I do believe that there is a little bit of a – this is certainly not true for Jess, as I've had to reiterate three times now, because people will get the wrong message. But there are so many young people in the world right now who do define themselves by what's wrong with them rather than their actual character or personality. And I think that is probably – the prime suspect in why we have such mental health issues. Because if you define yourself by a disorder or a condition, which is considered...
Or use it as a scapegoat.
Which is considered to be negative, because otherwise it wouldn't be a disorder, you know. When you define yourself by those things at the outset, you're creating a really hard path for yourself. You're choosing to go on the most dangerous mountain pass rather than on the highway. And you're asking for a lot of grief and pain and dissatisfaction in your own life. And I think a lot of kids, it might not even be the kids. It might be the parents that are doing this to the kids. That worries me a lot. Again, not Jess, because I have to keep saying that. But there may be parents out there who are diagnosing their children with these things so they don't have to deal with them. So they can blame a disorder. So they don't have to parent them. And there's an enormous amount of self-absorption. I know you fought back on this, and I'm glad you did. But there's an enormous amount of self-absorption that I just can't handle anymore from people who are constantly looking in. They're so involved in themselves, second-guessing their own conscience, working out whether or not they really feel the way they feel. And it's just nonsense. Yeah. It's complete masturbatory nonsense. It means nothing to the rest of us. And that's not mental health. That's just being human. There isn't a day that goes by where you don't consider yourself and what you think of yourself and how you feel about certain things. It's become like all people talk about, especially on social media, and it's enough already. Most of us just have to get on with our lives. Do something. Stop talking about yourself, you know? Again, not Jess. I love what she's done.
Yeah. So there's kind of two things for me that I took from that is that, you know, what's difficult is most of us are not a precocious talent. I mean, she is. I don't care by any international measurement, at least sort of in the linguistic field of life. We don't know the rest of her development, a precocious talent. And people don't know how to deal with a precocious talent because she looks like she's 10.
Yeah.
But she sounds like she's 25,
I know.
Which means I'm a big proponent of, hey, if you're old enough, you're good enough, let's talk like a grown-up. So I really love that she's thought about. She's not just going to say, I've got, like a lot of people I hear is, and I do push back, Gareth, because I take it very seriously. People think it's good enough to go, oh, no, I'm suffering from mental health.
Yeah, bullshit.
What does that mean?
Get a diagnosis.
Yeah, what are you going to do with it, you know?
And she's what done does something it mean? With it. But I like that at her age, sorry, I didn't catch her age, but she's thought about it enough to not get sort of panicky when you ask her about it, and she's laying it out. Now, that tells me you're not self-involved. You've clearly asked for feedback. It is nobody who's self-involved can sort of give that incredibly articulate feedback.
I agree. I agree.
10, 14.
But I do. I see. I'm not talking about kids. I see adults doing this stuff. I see adults going on TV and pouring their hearts out about how anxious they are. And I'm like, well, it's because you're in your own head the whole time. It's because you're totally self-involved. You don't see a world outside yourself. Maybe if you actually went out to a place where people are desperately poor and you saw how they have to trudge water around all day, you'd stop thinking about yourself the whole time. Maybe if you got your hands dirty and did some labor and actually built something or went out there and made a difference in someone else's life instead of thinking about yourself the whole time, maybe then you wouldn't have so much anxiety. You know what I mean?
But it becomes tricky, Gareth, because, and Leanne, I'd love to hear from you here, is now we've created an environment where, you know, I come from whatever background I come from, where in my household you can't get away with that, but is if someone says, I'm suffering from mental health, you're not allowed to probe them. You're not allowed to say, what does that mean?
Right.
Because then we can never get to, maybe you're just a lazy dickhead.
Absolutely.
Because that exists
and
as well.
And they've self-diagnosed themselves. They've actually never been to a clinician and had the proper diagnosis, or they haven't sat down and spoken to someone who's a professional about it. And that is sufficient. You cannot argue with someone. Someone says they're anxious, you go, well, it must be true. You're anxious. Could be that you actually are just a loser. It could also be that you are a massively complex genius who hasn't figured out how to deal with that.
That's so dangerous. It's so dangerous. It's like me waking up one day and saying, you know, I've had this pain in my side for months now. You know what it is? I know what it is. It's pancreatic cancer.
Right.
I've got pancreatic cancer, everybody.
Yeah, and then suddenly...
You can't do that.
And listen, again, you do this stuff to yourself. You are choosing a difficult life. You are choosing a complicated life. How about you just accept, like many people do, that with all of these problems, and I'm not saying that this is for serious cases, and you'll know whether it's a serious case or not, because it's your life, right? You just got to get on with living. Figure out a way through this stuff. I mean, that's what you got to do. I want to stop here because we're going to run out of time otherwise, and George has always got a bag full of tricks for us. So, George, how are you, and how's your Friday looking?
Friday's looking... Hello, Freanne. if you've noticed, every week I've put something else in the front of that and, like Freanne, Threeanne.
Yeah, okay. Well done, George. We weren't paying enough attention to you, George. Let me just start again. George, I can't believe how you put a different word in front of Anne every time you come on. It's so fantastic. Well done.
Okay, Threeanne. So I was listening to the show before this, and I went and Googled it, and the word hypochondriac, Okay. Is a morbid concern about one's health an exaggerated attention to any unusual bodily, and I didn't know this part existed in the word hypochondriac, and mental sensations, a delusion that one is suffering from some disease for which no physical basis is evident?
Correct. Mm. There we go. Voila. Boom. Everybody stop talking and think about that definition for a couple of seconds. All right, George, I wish we had time to stop talking, but you've got a lot on the agenda, so let's get straight to it. What's on the menu for today?
So I don't know, you know, I actually need to look this up, where Wisconsin is in the United States. What's Wisconsin?
Wisconsin.
Green Bay. That's what you mean on the map.
Well, whether it's in the south of America or not.
It's more central. Like it's a tiny little town. Interesting thing about Green Bay is their football stadium, right, has a bigger capacity than the size of the actual town. Yeah, it's quite interesting. Yeah, it's a legacy title town. They call it.
Well, somebody spotted at a McDonald's drive-thru. I mean, just imagine this for a second. You're at a McDonald's drive-thru, and the car in the parking lot with you, or in the lot with you, has a genuine cow on the back seat.
Oh, that's brilliant.
What?
That would stop me in my tracks. I would love to see it. That's phenomenal. A cow sitting in the front seat of the car.
We're sitting in the back seat of the car.
Oh, that's awesome.
So there were apparently three calves in the back seat of this car, and it was a Buick. Now, if you know what a Buick is, it's like a medium to large size SUV.
Right.
And there were three cow calves, whatever they are, in the back seat of this car, and this lady took a video of it. I just posted the link to you.
Yes.
A lady took a video of it, and you can see the calf looking out the side of the window.
I love that.
But the funny thing for me is that it's at a McDonald's where they serve cow.
I want to, but I want to be able to drive around with a cow in my back seat all the time. I think that's the coolest thing ever.
Have you ever been out in public and you hear like a mom say to their little child, you know, like, hey, if you don't behave, do you want that bad man to take you away like that, you know? I imagine that's what you're doing to a car when you take them to McDonald's. Like, if you don't keep it together and keep producing milk, you're going to be in between.
There's the cow. Look at that.
Oh, that's unbelievable.
So cool. I want a cow in my backseat. That's great. That's so great. All right, George.
There's the naughty chick.
I got a story for you, George. This is a big deal. This is from autospies.com, right? I'm sure you go there often enough. So listen to this. Tesla's Model S Plaid finds the limit the hard way at the Nuremberg Ring. Apparently this car, which you've spoken about a couple of times, this Tesla, was at the Nuremberg Ring, and there was no other info available, but judging by the new videos that have been uploaded on Car Spy Media, this thing is not very impressive, George. It seems you still need an ICE vehicle if you want to take part in the real petrol head stuff. It looks like it ran out of brakes and used the guardrail to slow down, this Tesla.
Wouldn't surprise me. This thing is so fast, I'm pretty sure that they've got to now learn to upgrade the brakes.
But, I mean, if you're going to be a performance car, it's not just in getting fast. It's also in being able to slow down quickly enough, right?
Exactly.
Right. So
but I don't think
Tesla needs to do some work, George. Let's be honest.
I don't think it was Tesla's intention. I don't mean to sound like I'm defending Tesla, because I've got my views on the quality of the build of Tesla versus the Jaguar I-Pace. Uh-huh. But I don't think it's the intention of a car manufacturer to build a fast car that is track ready. So you know, you can go and drive a Golf GTI, and it's a very quick car. If you jump on those brakes enough, you will cook the brakes, and then eventually they will be sponge, and you might crash into something. So if somebody's going to take a car on a track, to be honest, you've got to consider the fact that the car's got to stop. But I agree with you. I think Tesla's got to consider those brakes, because the car does 0 to 100 km/h an hour in 1.9 seconds.
That's amazing.
That's bliss.
We're always talking about EVs on the show. I thought I'd bring a little bit of the other side to the argument. There's still a lot of people in the world who don't regard these electric cars as being the real deal, and we mustn't pretend they don't exist. That's all.
Mm.
Right.
We can't pretend they don't exist, and they're a different breed, and that leads me into one of the stories that I think are important, and that is VW is slowly phasing out manual gearboxes. So I don't think anybody's ever driven what is called in America a stick shift.
Okay.
They've slowly disappeared. Land Rover, Jaguar, totally not got any manual cars in their fleet anymore, and VW does, and they'll be slowly phasing them out. Now, if you imagine an electric car doesn't have a gearbox, it can never be a manual. So manual cars will never exist in the future. And then I don't know if everybody's familiar with the fact that you could up to now and can get a driver's license for an automatic car. And a driver's license for a manual. If you've got a driver's license for a manual car, you can drive an automatic, but if you've got a driver's license for an automatic, you can't drive a manual.
Okay. I didn't know that. So I obviously got my license when it was manual, so I can do both, right? So the people who got an automatic license, they can't drive a manual car. That's, well, it makes sense, but I didn't think about it. I never really spent a moment considering it.
Yeah, I mean, you can imagine trying to drive a manual car for the first time. You're going to stall a lot.
I have experience in that. When I was younger, I had a crazy night out, and I needed someone to drive me home. So I phoned my tenant at the time, who was American. I'm like, "Hey, Matt, could you possibly collect me, blah, blah, blah?" He goes, "Yeah, I can, but once I get there," because he was going to Uber there.
Yeah.
In those days, it wasn't even an Uber. It would have been a taxi. And then he got into the car and he started it. And he went, "Oh, I can't drive stick." And we were absolutely screwed. He couldn't even pull off.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's definitely a separate license.
Okay.
But you won't need it in the future. And then, you know, the Olympics have been going on, and then the Paralympics has just started in Tokyo. Toyota was the company, or is the company, that provided what was called the e-pallet transportation pod. I don't know if you saw these during the Olympics, and they were designed with ramps and access doors so that athletes could quickly get in and out of these e-pallets, and groups of them could be transported from one spot to the other. Now, the thing about these e-pallets made by the Toyota Motor Company is they were self-driving. So they didn't have a driver, and they navigated to the next destination on their own.
Yeah.
Turns out that they've stopped using them suddenly now because one of these self-driving cars knocked over a visually impaired person.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, my word.
All right. Wow. I'm not laughing because I'm taking pleasure in a blind person being knocked over. I'm laughing because I've just seen what an e-pallet looks like. Oh, holy mother of God, what a horrible-looking vehicle. Okay, I'm going to put a picture of it up.
It's
the most terrible-looking thing ever. I mean, these things should be banned just because they look like that. Let me see where the picture is, because it's not coming up for some reason. But it's a horrible-looking. It's very futuristic, obviously. I think the idea is here that this thing must be, what would you call it, George? A people carrier. So it's like those buses at the airport. They're not particularly ergonomic or designed for speed or for, what do they call it? Aerodynamics or any of that stuff. It's a hideous looking creature. Let me see if I can load this thing up. I don't know why it's not coming up on my screen. Ah, there we go. All right. It's an e-pallet, and this thing knocked over a blind person. I mean, how humiliating, first of all, to be blind and be hit by a car, but to be hit by one of these. Look at that. Horrific.
Oh, no.
Horrific. Look up Toyota e-pallet if you're not watching us live.
It looks like the motorized version of a pug.
Worse, it's like a bread. It's like a loaf of bread with four wheels attached to it. That's the best way to describe it. It's just awful.
Nobody should be eating bread or driving in that.
No.
I think, a loaf of bread with wheels.
Yeah, that's it.
It's a half loaf.
It does look like a loaf of bread or a bread tin.
Carl wants to know, isn't ipalet the word in Zulu for the roof of your mouth? I think that's also true.
That's so good.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. South Africans are amazing.
Anyway, I'm very sorry for this. Was this blind person killed or were they just hit?
No, they were just injured. So it wasn't.
And they didn't see it coming.
There we go. Yeah, there we go. There it is.
Watching my mom watching the Paralympics, and she's in a wheelchair. It's the first time she's watching it being in a wheelchair and unable to walk. And even she had jokes. So, you know, it's not like as soon as you're disabled in some way that you lose your sense of humor, that's for sure.
Yeah, my sense of humor is so dark, I dare not watch the Paralympics. I dare not. It's an invitation for disaster, and I'm just going to stop talking about it right there, otherwise we get into trouble. Go on, George.
Yes, let's move on to elderly people. So in Japan...
Another area of dark humor for me. This is great. All right, tell me about those smelly old people.
Japan's population is aging. There was a 90-year-old former senior government official who was sentenced to 5 years in prison for knocking over and killing a 3-year-old girl and her mother in a high-profile, fast-aging country where people are lobbying to actually get driver's licenses taken away from elderly people, and which means that many of the drivers in Japan will lose their licenses. Right. Now, I don't know what your opinion is. Is there an age limit? 17% of Tokyo's traffic accidents, as a matter of fact, are aged or aging people, elderly people. Should people's driver's licenses be taken away, or is it merely a case of having to retake the test so that there's no actual age cutoff? Because many people are actually quite cognizant of the age of
80. We've got to say there are good 90-year-olds, there are bad 90-year-olds. And there are some 90-year-olds that if you did take away their license and they're perfectly competent behind the wheel of a car, they probably would die because they'd lose their independence and it would really hit them hard. You know, you talk about mental illness and mental health. I think that everybody should be tested as an individual. If you're an individual who has a hearing aid and you have glasses, but you're otherwise quite capable of reacting timeously to any threat on the road, there's no reason you should be prejudiced against just because of your age. Just like you can't be, if you're a 20-year-old, you shouldn't necessarily be considered a better driver than someone who's 80.
Yeah. It depends on your mental state and whether your reaction times. And many people at 80 are pretty quick.
I agree.
And then finally, Gareth, the BP is the first petrol station in South Africa to be given a liquor license.
BP, that's excellent. Good news.
So what, I drive to go and pick up my beers?
Yeah.
I'm pretty... Yeah. Well,
it's
remember...
BP, we like to keep you boozing.
That's right. but why...
Bear in mind that these stores at the filling stations are 24/7. They're open 24/7. So I suppose that's the draw card.
But what is this obsession that we have with telling people what to do? Some people are going to drink themselves to death. Some people are going to drink and drive. There's absolutely nothing you can do about this. The fact that somebody suddenly has a problem with BP, when you can get your liquor anywhere else as well. I mean, you shut down all these shops, as we learned last year, with liquor. And people just go to, like, underground shebeens to find their booze. The problem isn't the alcohol. It's the people who drink the alcohol. And those people are going to be a problem until they're dead.
They'll find a way. They'll absolutely find a way. So, let's see what happens with the pushback. Who knows? BP now faces this barrage of trying to get the decision shut down.
No. And people are going to
It's like America, right, George? I mean, in America, the convenience stores, these things already exist. We're not reinventing.
Except in America, you can go in. So you pull up to a gas station. You say, I want you to fill up my truck with gas. And can I also have a 6-pack of Budweiser? And bring me a gun. I need a gun. I want a handgun. What you got? You got a Glock for me? I like a 9mm Glock. Get me one of those. And you know what? I'd also like a burger with cheese. That's what you do in America. Why the hell not? George, thank you very much. Just got to tell you before we go for this morning, We have our podcast of the week, and every week we try to show you what else is going on in cliffcentral.com. There's some shows you might have missed in the incredible array of content that we have. We've got a show called Market Share, which is hosted by none other than Reg Lascaris, who is the advertising mastermind and genius, the guy who kind of took advertising in this country to a new level. And this story, this week, you want to listen to, goes all the way back to 1983. Two young guys, short on cash, big on dreams, they decided to start an advertising business. This week on Market Share, Reg Lascaris sits down with his business partner, John Hunt, and they take a nostalgic trip back in time, discuss some of the campaigns that put their company on the global map. You can find the podcast on cliffcentral.com, on our app, or wherever you listen. I mean, wouldn't you like to sit at dinner with John and Reg? John Hunt, Reg Lascaris, and hear how advertising grew under their incredible aegis. You want to listen to this, trust me. Market Share, hosted by Reg Lascaris. You can find it on cliffcentral.com. And with that, it is goodbye. Enjoy your weekend. We will see you on Monday, everybody. Be good.
Cliffcentral.com.